Do choices really matter? We're going to be having a discussion about that and whether choices in games matter on a varying degree of levels, as well as a lot of the big Battlefield 5 news. So stay tuned, because this is Inventory Full.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
Welcome everybody into the Inventory Full area studio. This isn't the Inventory Full studio, this is the Popcorn Talk Network studio. Thank you to fine folks. If you can't tell, the logos are everywhere! So, thank you to the fine folks at Popcorn Talk for giving us a place to talk about video games and video game culture. Welcome in. I'm one of your hosts, Mark Budonica, joined as always by the team. Hey, look, it's Nate Miller!
What's up, nerds?
Hey, look, it's Stacey Shuttleworth!
Hey, guys!
Oh, that's right. No, it was good. It was perfect. Thanks. It was great. All of the not... transitions. Hi, everybody. Patrick is not with us today. It is a holiday, so he's spending some time with his folks that have traveled into town, but make sure to get him into the conversation at Pete of the D's. He gets an intro, full intro, because we don't, because he's not here. Anyway, we're gonna have a nice conversation. A lot of the times, especially last week, there's just a lot of news, and we don't get a chance to like sort of talk and expand our horizons and have discussions. Nate, this is something that you've been trying to pull for quite some time, and luckily, with today being a holiday, the studio isn't as crowded, so we get an opportunity to take a little bit more time than we usually would. Thank you to the folks at Popcorn Talk again, and Steve in the booth. Hey, it's Steve. So we're gonna the main crux of today's show is gonna be talking about choices, but there were a couple of stories that I did want to bring up because I think there's a lot to talk about. But before we get to those, let's talk about what we've been playing. I was very boring. I'll get my stuff out of the way really quick. I sort of stayed in my comfort zone. I played some Junkenstein's Revenge for the Overwatch special event, and I keep missing Lucio Ball, which is my favorite of the arcades. I'm a little sad that they're moving every single day because they're just on days when I can't play. And if you joined us over the weekend, I did a build in Minecraft. I started a build of Camp Campbell from one of my favorite animated series, Camp Camp, and I plan on continuing that, so I'm thanking to everybody who joined. We had some people raiding from our friend and mod, Zevader, so thank you for joining us on that. I had a lot of... Man, being back in Minecraft, especially in creative mode, has been a lot of fun, but that's all that I played, really. Stacey,
yeah,
you've been playing a lot of stuff.
I mean, relatively. I've done a lot of family stuff over the weekend, so I didn't get as much gaming as I wanted to in. But yeah, I started that God of War.
Oh, yeah.
I did it.
So this will be three out of four of us that have played the game. Initial thoughts. What do you think about it so far?
It's so pretty.
Yeah.
The camera work is so interesting, and it's really cool to follow. I like that the camera is so fluid, but it also gives you those little classic cues to know, oh no, it's your turn now, go. Otherwise.
When it goes right back to, like, it's something and then it sweeps and then it's right behind you again. You're like, oh, all right, time to move again.
I can go.
How much of it did you get to play?
Oh gosh, I only played maybe 2 hours worth.
Okay, that's what I figured.
Very introductory stuff, cool. Mostly only.
One of my favorite things about God of War is I asked Patrick this right after I started my first play session was, do you keep learning new stuff as the it like while there is a moment that you're going to experience when you go, oh, now the game started, and then you have that moment again and again and
I know
again.
Everything I need to know.
Exactly.
Oh, nope, there's more.
Exactly. And that's one of my favorite things about it is it does it so naturally, and not really heavy-fisted of like, oh, well, you're going to need this power up. You're going to need that power up. Well, I guess it's time for a new thing. It says I'm going to learn something new, but it always does it in a way that benefits the story first, which is why playing this game in easy mode isn't that much of a thing, because you're a god anyway, and it helps with the power of fantasy. But how do you like handling the axe?
I like the axe. I like throwing the axe. I like throwing the axe at enemies and then having it swing back to me and hit them again on the way back.
Oh, so much fun.
And that's the only way to attack, really.
So are you just throwing the axe?
Okay, so I'm doing a combination of just throwing the axe and then melee combos, because then you get to do that cool R3 power-up attack and rip the enemies in half, which I like equally as much as throwing the axe at them. So combat has been frustrating for my husband, who's watching me play this game.
Who comments she was checking it everywhere. Everywhere! It's so much fun.
Once you learn that if you throw the axe at certain things, it does stuff, you have to throw the axe at everything to make sure that those things don't do stuff too.
This is the God of War version of, since God of War is ostensibly about, I need to climb that mountain, you need to find something else to do everything of, and it's, I need to throw the axe at everything.
Right, the goal is already to climb that mountain. So my only purpose in gaming this is already like, fulfilled.
Already Kratos, game of the year.
And Kratos can't read, so it's not like she can find any books.
Okay, but there's lots of lore. Yeah, there's no books to read, but there's lots of ancient texts.
It's boy, read that for me.
Yeah, yes. He'll read it to you.
The interaction between getting the fact that you're thrust into the relationship so... Despite, like, you know, this is the boy's father, they should have some sort of an established relationship, and yet they're still trying to figure out how to be around each other. And to be present for that is pretty interesting. There's a lot of idle chatter that happens that really helps you figure out what their relationship is. It's one of those things where it's one of those games where I'm like, I beat it the day of a show last week, and I was like, who wants it? Somebody needs to play this
game. Someone claim it.
Please.
Yes.
Because this is one of those games that I think more so for story, but also for gameplay. Like the story inherits the gameplay as opposed to the other way around. And I've just been obsessed with watching any and every piece of extra content that this has. I'm really excited for everybody to finish because PlayStation has been releasing director's commentary for particular scenes from the game, or particular parts where Corey Barlog is talking over the game and going, oh, well, this is why we did this and this and this. And I was just like, oh, this is the best.
Oh, more to look forward to.
Yeah. But, cool. And it also, yeah. Your thoughts on the first fight?
Like the first...
The first boss battle.
Man, that was frustrating. But expected of gods, I guess.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess. Man. I mean, it was real cool getting thrown through buildings and through rocks.
Nate, you got a red box this, man. Mm. You got a red box this. Well, now that... You've been running through some games yourself.
Yeah.
So you just finished Deadfire 2, yeah? Or I Pillars did. Of Eternity 2, Deadfire.
Yes.
Yeah.
I finished a run, yes.
Okay, a single run. Tell us about it. Because I've been hearing about this game ad nauseum at work, but like getting an actual, no offense to the folks that I work for, but getting a non-paid-for reaction,
right.
I've been looking forward to.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it a lot. It took me about 30 hours to get to the end. The final kind of decisions that you have to make at the end, I thought were really interesting and the kind of the way it played out, the way that, you know, decisions I had made earlier impacted the way things played out. And, you know, it reminded me a lot as I was playing it of New Vegas. I said this last week, but even in the way that it ends.
How about that? both Obsidian games, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But just the way that they're the different factions, like it was really hard to choose. Like, and honestly, because I had the consolidation of knowing I'm going to play this again and do other things. That is only what made it kind of. That kind of helped me make my decision and like, all right, this is what I'm going to do this playthrough. Because for a minute I was like, I don't know who to pick, who to back. Because there's like four different factions at a certain point that all can kind of get you where you need to go to kind of end the game. It was dizzying. And I really enjoyed the companions. The voice acting is phenomenal. It makes a huge difference for games like that have so much text for like... conversation interaction within like the way stories play out and also giving you options to do different things. It was really cool. Yeah. All I'm right. happy with it.
Well, I'm excited to talk more about the choice, the elements of choice, because some of the stuff that you sent us to look over reminded me like, oh yeah, there was was something that you could choose in this game, and it didn't mean anything.
Yeah,
yeah. I played, opened up old wounds.
Yeah, that one kind of has it. Has both. It has all of the little pieces that I want to talk about that we can talk about later. I do also want to mention I've still been playing Destiny. It was Iron Banner weekend.
I think I have something for you in my car, Destiny related.
Hopped in a few sweaty 6v6s.
Okay.
It was pretty fun. Game's in a good place.
Are you still playing State of Decay? begrudgingly, look, yes.
I want to like this game, okay? And it's very likable.
That's the worst.
But it's just so buggy right now. And, like, the main draw is the multiplayer, and the multiplayer is the buggiest spot. I tried to get together with two other friends to do some co-op, and they were doing fine up until, right, like, 40 minutes later when I was like, all right, I'm ready, I'm going to join you guys. And they just started having connection issues. And then we just couldn't get on the same server. And when we did, like, we couldn't see each other sometimes. Or there would be, like, invisible zombies that people were dying to. Yeah, some crazy buggy stuff. But the core of the game is there. The systems are there. You know, it looks pretty good. It just needs some love. So hopefully, you know, I'm assuming that they're going to give it more patches and update it. Because this, you know, it had a pretty extensive beta, from what I understand. That got lots of balance updates and stuff.
Yeah, and they were kind of user. It wasn't open. I remember correctly, it was closed. Mm-hmm. And especially with a franchise that, in a world where Microsoft doesn't have as frequent of a flexing of a first party game, for something to launch like this is really upsetting. Even though word's been going around that Microsoft doesn't care as much about single party games and single party development anymore as much as having studios to do that for them. So that's unfortunate.
Yeah, because it really seems like if they did focus on it, this would be a great, you know, another game like Sea of Thieves that is great to play with your friends, and it's cross platform. Like that should be a big draw for them to get people to choose buying Xboxes over like a PlayStation. Because you get to bridge the PC community and the console community. And especially in a game like this where there's no PvP, so it's not like there's an imbalance in matchmaking like that. It's just being able to play with more friends, having more options.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I did want to pivot into that, into PUBG. The PUBG Corp came out recently and mentioned that there was a lot of performance changes that they admittedly haven't been able to get to. Optimization, vehicle optimization, because, you know, driving over the land too fast can, if you don't have a strong enough PC, it can wreck you. It can wreck you a little bit.
I mean, it's not even the PCs, it's just the terrain and the physics and stuff. Like, people, streamers that have, like, you know, the high-end PCs with a streaming PC that's not, you know, with a separate PC to stream, will still be in the trike and you hit the wrong bump and just go flying and then you're sailing through the air with a knockdown animation, and you just know that when you hit the ground you're gonna die. Yeah, it happens to everybody.
As well as cheating, they're just trying to this was something that you kept telling me about when it came to once they were going to go 1.0, like, optimization, great, and here we are.
Yeah.
Stacey, you've been playing a lot of Fortnite, but when was the last time you went back to PUBG?
I went back to PUBG when they did that 20v20v20, those maps, and I played a couple of rounds of that challenge and then the regular game then, and honestly, it plays horribly.
Ooh.
It feels bad. And
it
feels worse for me because it's not something that I naturally click into. Like, I can't just pick up that gun and go. So it's even harder. But that game, I mean, and I don't have a top of the line PC, but I have a decent PC, and it's choppy and it's rough. I mean, the terrain really screws you over, especially with a group of people who like to get in a vehicle and drive everywhere and anywhere. Yeah, Fortnite might be a more campy, ridiculous game, but it feels good to play.
Yeah.
In a way that I don't think PUBG feels.
Have you noticed a bit of a drop off, Nate? Because I know you used to play fairly regularly,
mm-hmm.
and now there's just been a lot of other stuff to play. But what was it like? When was the last time you played? To be honest,
probably like maybe a week or two ago.
Okay,
maybe 2 weeks.
And before that, like another couple of weeks.
Probably more frequently before that.
Okay,
I have my group of friends that I play with. I have a couple buddies that I play the game with fairly regularly.
Mm-hmm.
One of my friends has a baby, so for her, it's nice to be able to just like play a few rounds when the baby takes a nap or something, and then like. Baby wakes up, I have to take care of, like, okay, bye, we'll see you on the other side. Like, it's not the end of the world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good game for that. It's hard to argue against that because it's still not optimized at the spot that it should be, but it's gotten a lot better, which is like, it's not necessarily saying much, but it has gotten a lot better. They have worked on it, and to say that now they're going to focus on optimization, I'm optimistic because they haven't left the game in like a stale state at all. They've been even the way the gun mechanics have all changed. I think that's all for the better. Mm-hmm. Now the vector's a little too strong right now, but it's nice to have variety in weapons and not just everybody running around with two ARs.
Mm-hmm.
They took off a level 3 helmet, so it's only in a crate. So now things like a KR, bolt action sniper rifles are all one taps to the head unless they get the thing from the crate. So it makes the crate. It's like they changed the meta. That's really good for games like this. Mm-hmm. So I haven't experienced a drop off. I never have an issue finding a game when I play. It's not like it ever takes a long time.
Mm-hmm.
The subreddit seems pretty active. I definitely see more people come play whenever they do like an event, and I don't think they've done any special weekend events in a while. Ever since they did the
2020 was the last one.
No, they did another.
A
couple more.
Yeah, they did some car ones, mm-hmm. and then it stopped because they did they started doing the testing every weekend for the new map, mm-hmm. for Sanook.
Yeah,
right.
But now I think that's on live. Well, I haven't played. Yeah, because it's patched it in.
That's going to be live end of June.
Yeah, so that's not even Sonic, live yet.
But Myanmar just went live for Xbox.
For Xbox, right.
So, and especially now developing for two consoles, mm-hmm. you know, that splits the team, mm-hmm. unless they just bought a second team mm-hmm. to do it.
It's just the thing that I think the community is frustrated by and why it's important that they make this statement is because while they have worked somewhat on the optimization, it seems like they've made a lot more progress on, like, the new maps and mm-hmm. like a bunch of skins and loot boxes that nobody really wants and stuff like that, and I think a lot of people feel like they have all of this money and this energy and they should have focused on the optimization first and got it like super polished and tight and then started adding the microtransaction stuff because then more people are going to play the game and more people are going to want to spend money instead of trying to get people to spend money now when they already spent money on the game and it, you know, doesn't run mm-hmm. very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not going to put money into getting skins or, you know, something cool to carry around if the game barely works for me.
But I still think that it offers a unique gameplay experience and loop that isn't really replicated in any other game right now because I would say that Fortnite is the same too because they operate in different spaces mm-hmm. and I think that's part of the reason why they're both so successful. Also, Fortnite's free, but
H1Z1 Battle Royale is free on the PlayStation Network now.
Yeah,
and what made me sad about that was they don't have, if they had Auto Royale for free on there, I think that would have been a huge spike at Fortnite on PlayStation at least.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm surprised that it didn't launch with it. Some of my friends that play console games are like, oh yeah, we just started playing H1Z1, and I like almost spit out my drink laughing. And I was like, ah, you console plebs playing a dead game. But that's good that they're bringing it to them. I think that makes more sense.
Yeah, Steve, did you just pull up H1Z1 has 1.5 million downloads on the... Here.
Yes, sir, that is correct.
So the open beta. A huge thank you to the 1.5 million plus of you who have joined us in the arena since H1Z1 open beta launched in PS4 yesterday. And this tweet was May 25th.
Yeah, 23rd.
23rd. Yeah. We are continuing to work to resolve login and purchase issues, and we're committed to bringing you a pure Battle Royale experience. So one of the things that they launched with is they have a PlayStation Plus pack, like cosmetic pack. So it's like, oh, there's some cool stuff that kind of looks PlayStation Network-y or something. And they have a bunch of other packs.
Is it free to play?
It's free. Yeah, the Battle Royale is free. But the H1Z1 base game, you can get packs that have cosmetics in them. So that's the purchasable stuff.
But the game is free.
But the game is free.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I downloaded it. I was about to download it, and then I was looking for Auto Royale because I was like, that I've been watching people play that. I've been watching people stream that. Yeah, and like, that looks like fun.
I actually kind of want to play that.
Yeah,
but I don't have any money to play
it
with.
Let's reach out to our friends at the studio. Maybe.
I mean, if they revive this and actually put some care into it, which it seems like they are, and it goes over well, great. I mean, this is going to be the closest thing of competition to PUBG in terms of that, like, free-to-play space, like, realism.
But also especially from, like, we're talking about how the vehicle play in PUBG isn't optimized to a point where it's wrecking top-of-the-line PCs. And here's H1Z1 with a game mode that is cars and well-optimized and plays really well and is fun.
Is it well-optimized?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, from everything that I've seen, the variety of people that I've watched play, so
it's also a different console's also a different space.
Exactly, too. I can agree with that as well. So moving from there, something that I saw that was really interesting. This is an article on Polygon. Polygon, Folsom University is adding an esports focus to their sportscasting class. Gus Ramsey, who is a former commentator from ESPN over the course of 10 years from 98 to 2008, teaches this class at Full Sail. And Full Sail is like I want to say technical school, but it's more of like a technician school,
like a
where it's
school.
Like sound. Yeah, trade school for technicians, video, sound, theater, live, a whole bunch of stuff. They shoot. There's a WWE show that shoots at Full Sail in Florida where it's run by students, or a lot of the students do a lot of the heavy lifting, and I found this interesting because we've had several discussions about one organization in particular when it comes to shoutcasting, and the fact that these folks, Gus Ramsey, Josh Mora, and Dan Patrick, are all coming together to make sure that everybody has the basics of what it's like to cover sports, but also finding the middle ground between explaining what's going on for people who may be new to the space and not explaining everything to the, quote, veterans of the space. Like, I know the game, shut up and just tell me what's happening. And finding, and the fact that there is money being put into courses to get people up to speed and be professionals that can be put onto television. This is a very, very cool read. I highly recommend everybody go check it out. It's on Polygon. It's called Dan Patrick Sportscasting School, Esports, Full Sail University. Check it out. But I wanted to bring it up because is there a of the various esports that we watch as a group, is there one that you would compare to being, or at least for a type of game, would you compare to being the most, quote, professional? Is there one that reflects? Is there one that reflects?
Did you get that?
Because they get a lot of the same people for various games. So is there a game type plus people that resembles a professional sports broadcast?
I mean, arguably, the entire Overwatch friend, this entire competitive Overwatch space has been designed to be professional, right? It hasn't risen up from the audience necessarily. It's been built as professional. I'm not saying it is.
But isn't it boo-boo, though?
I'm not saying it's actually professional, but
the answer is
designed.
Riot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because Riot did it the right way from, like, the ground up.
I'm not talking about building. I'm talking about the commentating, because we're talking about commentating.
Right. But that's what I mean.
Okay.
Because they got people that really, all of the people that are the main shoutcasters are people who played the game. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them work for Riot. Not all of them, but a lot of them played the game. A lot of ex-streamers also turn into shoutcasters. Or I'm sorry, ex-players turn into shoutcasters, like pro players and stuff. And it's all a great combination like they always seem to get a good balance of player stats, flow of the game, predictions of what's going to happen as a result of different plays. The drafting phase is a very big part too, where they talk about like drafting strategies and team compositions as the draft is going on. And then they also always dedicate time after games are over to, like, let's analyze this big play of the game. And they do the big screen thing with the slow motion. Then they have a desk of analysts talk about the game overall. And it's, like, one of the guys who is a pro player on a team who's, like, a great popular player, but they got eliminated, so he hasn't been playing recently. But, you know, they get people who are involved to talk about it. They do it all very professionally, but it's all from a point of view, and, like, it's all just as like the players and people that watch the game would be interested in seeing. I think the downside is some of them sometimes are not very new watcher friendly. Like if you didn't know what was going on and you heard the commentation, you'd be like really confused. But I think they also do a great job of juggling that, because they don't, it's not like the same people every time. Whenever they do an event, they'll have like six commentators and it'll be like, all right, it's these four this game, and then they'll swap two, and then they'll swap two. And so sometimes you get the friendly guy is on there who's like explaining everything, and then sometimes you get the other guys who are just like super hype and just calling out like player ability names and stuff that people are like, I don't know what the ability is called, stuff like that.
The way that you described that reminds me a lot of how Overwatch League does it, and yet I still as a fan of Overwatch, I still think that there's a barrier between the commentators. I think they're still trying to find their flow, because so much of the game can just happen, and you can just let the game happen, and especially because there could be six 1v1 instances happening at the same exact time. So, but while people go, oh, we're following this amazing player who will probably make great plays, then you go to the healer who ended up being in a corner and battle mercying their way out, and it makes for a completely different moment that you didn't see.
That's why I think even with games like the MOBAs, like Dota and League, the perspective is a huge advantage in terms of the spectator window. Being able to see top down, like games, League and Dota are both not made to be esports, but there's definitely a point in time in the design cycle where they went, all right, this is a thing, we need to design around this. League did a whole map overhaul where they said it like over and over again, clarity. We're going for clarity. They're redoing all the spells for clarity. They're doing all the colors for clarity to clearly define stuff. So even if you don't know what's going on, you can look and kind of decipher, right, that's the person the player is, that's the minion, that's a wall, whatever. And it makes it much easier to see what's going on. And also it makes for perfect replays of like, there's no bad angles, really. You know what I mean? You either see it or you don't. It's like, oh, the camera's in the wrong spot. Well, then you just move it in a replay.
As opposed to Overwatch being a
there's so many angles. And just like you said, it's so hard. Like the plays happen so fast and people can move so fast. Like how do you set up the camera for like, all right, in League, okay, the Baron pit is always in the same spot. They're always going to fight in some place around that. You know, maybe you move a little bit, but in Overwatch, the fight on a point could happen in any number of places around the point, at any different heights and in different rooms and stuff. It's hard. I think that's the biggest barrier is being able to spectate, not being in it.
And I think the rounds that end up coming out the best are either the capture the point or the payload maps, because the action is supposed to be centered around one point.
It's easier to follow the action. Yeah, and you know, with Overwatch especially, the predictive ability, since it's so new, there's been a lot of struggle with, okay, so you follow this player that usually does really big plays and you follow them, and then, you know, all of a sudden they're sneaking around the back for 2 minutes and there's a huge game-changing fight on the point, and then you're like, well, we just missed all of that while this Tracer was trying to set up a pulse bomb.
Yeah. The best place to watch Overwatch League is in the arena, because you get to watch everybody's health, everybody's like, are they on fire, like their streaks and everything is all right in front of you. That is what it is designed for.
It is beautifully set up in that arena. Yeah, like they really have it laid out, but you have to be there because you don't get that on the screen.
Yeah. I think eventually over time, you know, it takes time to shop these skills and get better, but also like the storylines and the dynasties. These are the things that the sportscasters have, talking about different legendary players' legacies and their stats to compare new players to, talking about teams' runs and the different team, like the player compositions and stuff. And that's something that I think is part of the reason why league is able to like be so professional, because they can talk about, you know, they have 8 seasons now of professional play in their game to reference of, you know, we have a faker who is like the Michael Jordan of League of Legends.
Yeah, yeah, or whatever. He won Player of the Year last year, didn't he? Like your esports
player
of the year.
Many times, yes. He, yes, at the video.
At the VGMs, yeah.
So they've got the celebrities, they have the dynasties of like TSM and CLG, they have the regional rivalries of like EA versus NA, same kind of thing. So it's very... it's cool, especially when you get to the world finals and you get to hear people talk about like the storytelling of other regions. That's really why I enjoy watching the finals, because I'm not, even though I like watching it, I barely watch the regular season, let alone watching another region's season. So to be able to go to the playoffs and the world finals in like the first rounds, and you always get the commentators saying like, oh, this team, you know, came from the bottom of their bracket and, you know, finally got it together and ended up in first place, and now they're here in the finals competing, and then getting to follow those teams, like that story, that's the interesting part to me. And that I think is what a lot of people like in sports. That's why people have a favorite team, because you're kind of subscribing to that story and getting invested in it.
And that's ultimately everything to me. Everything ends up going back to professional wrestling, because one of the things that people like about professional wrestling isn't just that it's a couple of dudes hitting each other, but it's the story. And they're getting invested in the story. And there was a while a couple years ago where UFC was really, really, really huge. And it's not that it hasn't been big, but it was really, really big. And one of the biggest fights, because I remember watching it, was because a dude was being a D-bag. He wouldn't, at the weigh-in, he was spitting at the other guy. He wasn't going in for handshakes. Like, all this stuff. And it made him a villain. And people were like, beat this guy up. And I was like, that's professional wrestling. And it's about the underdog story. In terms of Overwatch League, I'm always a passive fan of the Shanghai Dragons. Always. Because they're the underdog. And you really want them to win. And it's one of the things that... even walking around with my keys and having my Gladiators thing poking out at the office, was like, ah, oh, you're not a Valiant guy. I went, no, but I like rooting. First of all, wedding colors. Second of all, I like before I even knew who these teams were, because I didn't have the background of who these teams were. And I think that does the Overwatch League a disservice by not having that footage. Like, they're like, oh, teams and teams celebrating. These guys run a team together, but I don't know that story.
You reminded me. Story. I think it's very much worth bringing up the commentators in the fighting game circuits.
I also love them.
Definitely some of the most professional I've seen, especially when you get to like Evo and the finals and stuff. Again, God. The storytelling, the rivalries. You know, talking when you get
histories.
People talking, yes, exactly, and even talking about also characters too, and like this person plays this person in these type of fights, or they play with this type of play style, and then oh my god, they're bringing out their pocket pick that we've never seen,
yeah,
it's like hype stuff like that.
So one of my favorite things about Evo is the moment where it's like one more round before somebody gets like either knocked into the loser's bracket or knocked out. And they're just like twiddling their fingers and they're thinking and they're like hovering over a character and like the noise is starting to build. And if it's I'm kind of familiar with the Street Fighter and Marvel's Capcom and like a couple of games that I'm kind of familiar with, like character balancing. But for like there was one year for King of Fighters where somebody picked this really weird like team of three, and the crowd reacted huge, and they went this, and immediately with the same excitement as the crowd, is like, this is why this is unprecedented, this is why this is a thing, and boom, 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 all the facts. By the time the match starts, you know, cleaning house, whatever, with that new team, and that's what made me love the fighting game community was the shoutcasting more so than just watching people fight,
right?
But Ms. K. Rosenchat, before we get too far away, I really like watching the Overwatch League, but I think part of it is that it's a game I actually play. I'm a Fuel fan because I like the colors, but I had no clue who to follow, and while I'm still a Fuel fan, it's been rough.
Yeah,
they've been through some ups and downs. They're still playing really well. Despite
they beat my Fusion.
Oh, yeah, that's right, Philly. I forgot you were a Philly fan too. It's one of the things that I highly, highly recommend. If anybody is in town and has a passing enjoyment of esports and just esports in general, Tickets are cheap for the Overwatch, for the Blizzard Arena.
Especially during the week.
Especially during the week. And they've got like free giveaways on Wednesday and Thursday shows to try to pack the crowd.
Gotta get those people in those seats.
Yeah, you get a rally towel or a water bottle, but go. It's one of those things where they designed that experience for the people in the audience, and I highly recommend it. Yeah. Were you going to say follow up?
Just agreeing completely. Mm-hmm. It really is an immersive experience. Like, that environment is so well suited to... I mean, right now, for the Overwatch community and to just Overwatch fans, you get all the information you need very overwhelmingly thrown in your face. But it makes it a lot of fun.
Robbie says weekdays are like 2 for $22. Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah,
I definitely think I would enjoy watching Overwatch more if I played it more.
Mm-hmm.
But why I don't play Overwatch more is a discussion we'll have to have on another episode.
Sure. The last thing before we get into our deep dive discussion, and I'm so happy that we have time because we've been able to take some time and discuss things. Battlefield 5 debuted. We've got a trailer that we're going to watch whenever Steve's back around. Hey, Steve. That wasn't a knock. I love you. But let's take a look at that as we kind of talk over it. A lot of changes coming into the Battlefield 5 release that make me a little bit more excited for the game, and it's one of the lessons learned from Star Wars Battlefront 2. 100% is how they're handling their loot. Any loot that it changes gameplay, you can only earn by playing in game, and you earn credits by playing. There are also cosmetic items that you can also earn by playing, but you can also then pay real money in order to get those cosmetic items. So that's an amazing foot forward when it comes to loot boxes and EA learning from Battlefront 2. But in terms of single player, there's going to be a lot. It's similar to how Battlefield 1 operated, where you're traveling around the world and doing these different instances.
Scenarios,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's one character in Norway, a character in Greece, a character here, there, around the world. And I really like that. I didn't play much of Battlefield 1, but I really like the idea of being able to pop in and pop out of these various locations. They're also trying to focus a lot more on squad-based tactics. And
right.
Battlefield has always been a squad-based game, but now they're trying to sort of... they're trying to introduce a lot more scarcity. So when you respawn on your group, you may have to go back to your last post and get more ammo, more grenades, more anything. Or you could spawn on your squad and just try to help make that last push. It's a lot harder to advance by lone wolfing it, which I think is... helps me a lot when it comes to first-person shooter games is a lot of the lone wolfing it, as opposed to, no, we need to stay in a group. Also, anybody can revive, but a medic can revive you to 100%. Is that a barbed wire cricket bat? That looked cool. But DICE is putting a lot of work into this. They've got a couple of... go ahead.
Was the last one was called Battlefield 1, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because it was World War 1.
And now we're just going...
And now we're back to Battlefield 5. Yeah.
All right.
Anyway.
Shout out to the marketing team. Why not just call it Battlefield 2? If you're going to do it, just commit.
It's World War 2. If they had called it Battlefield 1, if they spelled it out as opposed to giving it the number... This is Battlefield V. It's still Battlefield 5, but it's not because it wasn't Battlefield IV. It was Battlefield 4 with like a alphanumeric 4 as opposed to a Roman numeral 4. Whereas this is Battlefield 5 with a Roman numeral 5.
That just makes it worse.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, that's not helping.
Because then if it's going to be a number, it should just be a number like the last one.
you got to have some consistency.
No, Battlefield like a hand like with five.
Like 5 fingers?
No, it's the Frostbite 5. Arrow pointing to the disc inside.
Are you referring to the woman with the prosthetic limb here?
No, I'm not referring to the woman with a prosthetic limb. I'm not a monster. Watch Camp Cam Season 3, Episode 1. Have you watched it yet?
I watched
it. So good. I watched it like 4 times. But some of the new stuff in multiplayer, I like they're doing. There's a game called Combined Arms, which is essentially cooperative raid like engagements where you just have to move to the next thing.
Okay.
Grand Operations is a 64 player engagement that plays out over three to four matches.
I had that last game
where it takes place day after day after day after day with different missions. Okay.
That's Combined Arms, right?
Grand Operations. This one is called Grand Operations, the one that I'm talking about.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah. Okay, cool. They called that as new. But also something that they learned, something that they, quote, learned from Battlefront 2 is there's going to be no premium pass that they traditionally offer, and all of the future
updates
are
going to
be free. No? No BR mode. Is that good or bad for you?
I mean, I was not going to buy it either way, but...
This is one of those things.
About last week, saying that was a missed opportunity if they weren't going to jump on that.
I don't know. I think Battlefield is focusing on all of the stuff that makes them Battlefield and plussing it up just a little bit here and there, and they're making a solid experience. Like I don't like
the things that make Battlefield. The feeling of insignificance when you spawn in and just get mowed down.
One of my favorite things about like Battlefield, I haven't had too storied of a pass with, but Battlefield 3 had an open beta, and it was the first time that I ever played the game, and I just wanted to try it out, and I loved it because you had to stick together, you had to work objective to objective, and anybody that would run up would get killed, and it was even weirder because it took place in France and in the metro, which I had just come back from a trip of, and I was like, I was here like 2 months ago. This is really weird. I know this street. I know all of this stuff. This is bizarre. So it had a really weird thing, but it always made me sort of, even though I didn't actively buy a Battlefield every year, it always made me sort of pro Battlefield because it played to my sensibilities. And I really appreciated it to where I could, being this newcomer, I still felt like I could do some good. So it didn't do anything for you.
I mean, I played it. I had a buddy that bought it, and I bought it on sale a few years after it had been
Battlefield
out.
Battlefield 1? Or Battlefield 3?
Battlefield 1.
I'm just talking about Battlefield in general.
Battlefield 1.
Okay.
But not 1, but 1.
Not the original Battlefield, right. Battlefield 1.
Yes.
Okay.
4.5.
Well, because it was Battlefield 1942, 1943, and then Battlefield 2, wasn't it?
Wasn't there, like, a future one, too?
Eventually. Battlefield 4 was the future one. No.
It was Battlefield 21.
You're real quiet, by the way, Steve.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, guys. Battlefield 21, I want to say 60, 34. I'll look it up.
I figured it would be 2142 just to keep that 42 year with it.
There was a future one.
Yeah.
I played that one. I played Battlefield 3, too. It was cool in how different it was, but it was also, like, so different.
Battlefield Hardline was the different one for me. I tried playing that one.
I played the story of Hardline.
Yeah.
Just because that was fun, but the wasn't a fan of the
I also like the physics of a Battlefield where everything they added some building elements in Battlefield 5. That was in the notes too, is everybody has a kit where you can build something.
Fortifications.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It also seemed like a siege, something that they learned from Siege too, where instead of just giving a couple of people specializations, give everybody the opportunity in various places to do something.
Mm-hmm.
I
love the gun mechanics in that game. And that's part of the reason why I really enjoyed the campaigns. Some of the scenarios were a little bit repetitive-y, but it was cool environment. It was cool to see the maps used in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it's just really cool to shoot the guns without being, like, killed every 30 seconds. I enjoyed that.
Well, that's one of my favorite things about the giant maps. 2142, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
Future. It was the future. I like the larger maps because there is a lot more of a, hey, I'm going to do something, like sort of a run into a line of bullets and fall down because everything's so spread out. You have a little bit more of an opportunity unless somebody's in like a Zeppelin or a tank. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if I can, I'm going to give Battlefield 5 a shot. You know, already before E3 this fall is already looking real busy. real busy. So, this one's October 19th, if I remember correctly. So, to whatever else is coming out in the fall, it's going to be really hard to fit in with a lot of the surprise stuff that we'll probably be told about later this month. We're going to be talking about E3 all next week, some of our predictions, what we want, what we don't want. That'll be an exciting conversation, too. Nate, we've gotten to the part of the show where we're going to be talking about some choices. What made you want to bring this up and talk about this today?
I just playing Deadfire, one of the main things I enjoyed about it was the dialogue choices in terms of how people reacted to how you spoke, but also little choices that you make throughout the game that make like not only a visible impact but like a gameplay impact on the rest of the game. And it just kind of got me thinking about other games that did the same thing, games that don't, you know, some games make you think that, like, you're making a choice, but no matter what you do, the same thing happens.
Yeah.
So I just kind of wanted to get your guys' opinion on that. What are some of your favorite games, you know, that have made you choose, some that are, like, memorable, stuff like that. I asked some of my other friends. Everybody said Mass Effect.
Yeah, that's kind of the first one that comes up.
That's not a game that I played. I lost to the elevator boss in the first game. Like, nope, not into this game enough to put up with this. I was thinking about all the elevators I would have to play. I'd have to sit through throughout the rest of the game, and I stopped. I couldn't do it. But I am familiar with the world and, like, especially like Mass Effect 2
and the Citadel.
Like 3 and, like, yeah, and the stuff that happens.
Well, I think the thing about Mass Effect was people were so invested in the fact that their choices did matter. And then at the end of it, it amounted to three small differentiating things that wasn't really a choice. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, the same thing was going to happen no matter what you did. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why there was so much disgruntled rage from the Mass Effect community, was because it wasn't I made all of these choices to do something good, and overall it means nothing, which is kind of a something about life, but ultimately not something that people want in their games. Stacey, was there any that came to mind for you?
Yeah, so I have really conflicted feelings about games where your choices matter, because I'm the kind of person who wants to explore every timeline and every opportunity. There's actually one game, a ridiculous little game, where your choices make, like... the game is about your choices.
Oh, okay.
It's this little indie game called Long Live the Queen.
Okay.
And it's not like a walk-around game. It's literally just it's a magical girl princess game.
Okay.
Basically. And you just choose different, like, skills for her to brush up on, and there's a story that you follow. And you build up your skills as you go. You can choose, you know, to study your courtly manners or your foreign intelligence or magic, or you can, like, become versed in the occult. Mm-hmm. And as you move through the story, well, you need certain skills to survive, otherwise you die horrifically.
And you don't know that until it's like, hey, you're going to die.
So you could be the most well-versed courtly princess with the best manners in the world, who knows the history of her country better than anyone in the world. But 20 weeks in, if you get a box of chocolates and you did not study, your presence with dogs and your ability to handle dogs, and they don't alert you that there's poison in that chocolate, you're dead.
All
it's
right.
Terrible.
And that's
wonderful.
Game over?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a brutal game. But these choices, you end up, you craft the kind of person you want this little princess become queen to be.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. It's like a mobile game, right?
Essentially.
Yeah.
But it's, but is it like, mean, a visual novel?
That's a sequel to... I don't think it's called Long Live the King. But there's another one, too, where you play... Is that the one where you swipe... You have, like, yes, no, and it gives you choices, and you have to, like, pick with the cards?
No.
That's a different game.
It's, no, but it's, it's just a kind of simulator, essentially.
Okay.
But you choose to train, so you can study, you know, foreign intelligence, or you can study jousting.
Interesting.
And as you go through these different choices, and you also, you can make choices where you key, like, you... essentially control her mental health.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have an extremely depressed, extremely angry princess, and it will boost her learning in certain areas.
Okay.
So you, like, right? I mean, it feels horrible sometimes because you're like, I need her to be lonely and upset and just in a horrible mood always so that you can, like, level up faster.
Yeah.
And you can have wildly different endings to this game. I mean,
Miss K Rose in chat is playing that and says that she's really enjoying it thanks to Steam's spring cleaning. Apparently they have it on sale.
I go back to that game regularly, like when I have a couple hours to kill, and just try to figure out as many different horrific things I can do. Like, well, there's like 30 different deaths you can get.
Mm-hmm. And is there an achievement for getting?
Yes. Yeah,
nice.
Yes.
100%.
And I need them.
Oh, that's funny. Good funny. Terrifying funny. For me, I usually don't have too many games where I am presented with those choices. I'm a fan of being lost in a narrative, if folks haven't picked that up yet already from me. But I do remember one, and it reminded me because it was on one of the lists that you sent, Batman Arkham City. It gives you there's a choice where you can either end the game early and just be like, ah, you lost, thank you, or go. A part of the pre-order was you got a Catwoman DLC, which I started playing and I went, I guess the code didn't work, whatever. And you finish a boss battle with the Joker, and it, like, where Bruce could be dead. And it fades to black. And then it fades up and you're Catwoman. And you're like, I don't want to play this right now at all. So it got to me in a really, really bad time where I was like, this is the worst, possibly the best, possibly the worst. For me at the moment, I was just so into the story and so into the dynamic between Bruce and the Joker that I wasn't ready for Selina to pop up. But especially because it was a stealth sequence. It was all stealth, which I'm... For like Assassin's Creed, it's you get caught, you fight your way out. But this was you get caught, back to one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so and it was like Last of Us.
Yeah, it was rough. It was so rough. I finally get through it, and she finds out about Bruce, and you can decide either to go save him, or I made my money, I can bounce. So I said, I made my money, I can bounce. And then they rolled credits. That was the end of the game. And I went, oh, that's bullshit. And then I had to do it again. Reload my save, do it again, and make the other choice, to which Selina showed up and saved Bruce right after the fade to black happened in the main story. And it, one of the few things that wrecked that game for me was that moment. It was just the wrong time, the wrong place to put a decision, where ultimately it did affect the rest of the game, where it was like, nah, you're done. Congratulations. But it was more of a dick thing, like, oh, good, great, good for you. You picked money, and you got an achievement for it, but it was really lame. Yeah. And I was... So Steve, what's up?
Oh, I was just saying...
You're really quiet again, boss.
Got it. There we go.
Hey, bud.
Sorry about that, guys. Yeah, it just reminded me when Pat beat Prey. You remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, when he beat it early on the station, and he took that other option to just leave the station, and then he got the bad ending.
And that was it.
No.
Well, also the Far Cry, they've done it twice now. Where if you listen to the bad guy and you sit and you wait, or however it is in 5, but at least in 4, when Pagan Min says, "Hey, I'll be back in 10 minutes," you wait 10 minutes. You're like, "All right, let's go build this reactor." And you go, you lay your mom to rest, and that's the end of the game. That's that type of stuff. I think is more beneficial to like the lifeblood of a game as opposed to a fake choice. That's something where it's like, hey, thanks for paying attention. We're going to give you a little bit something extra, as opposed to, at least in my case, here's 2 hours or however long it was. It felt like forever. But so, here's so long to give you something that ultimately doesn't matter. We just made more gameplay stuff,
right,
as a character that you're not used to playing, that overall, if I didn't have that, wouldn't have affected the story other than she just shows up.
I think the distinction to make, and that's important when we're talking about like choice in games, is the difference in choices that are like small choices that you just kind of make along the way that seem inconsequential that end up actually having consequences, and choices that are put there intentionally for you to think about and weigh the options, and like kind of the fun of that is for you to think about and weigh, you know, and actually finally selecting a choice. And I think in some of those games where that is the way, I don't necessarily like it, but I can see why it doesn't really matter what you choose, because it's not about the outcome. It's about the choice itself.
I agree with that.
Yeah. So I see some games doing that. One of the reasons why I like Deadfire is because like I said, there are a lot of choices you make that change the world around you. Mm-hmm. But there also is, you know, a few changes, especially choices, especially at the end of the game, that lots of big sweeping things happen. It seems, I'm not sure, I haven't finished another playthrough, but it seems like the end is the end no matter what you do. But there's a lot of stuff that happens that kind of you don't get to play afterwards. They're just like, all right, all of this stuff happened because of what you did. But
like
now the game,
some
yeah, credits
off.
Rolls. Yeah, and then it's just, it's over. You just got to start a new game or load up as before you ended it. Kind of like a Fallout situation.
Okay.
Depending
on what group you picked.
Right.
Yeah.
But again, for me, like as far like old games, that was one of the reasons why I loved Fable so much, the whole Fable mm-hmm. series, is that choice of being able to...
Excuse me. Bless you.
Woo.
That was weird.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
I held it in. Yeah, I love the Fable series for that reason of kind of that being able to choose your choices and how that affects your character. Another game my friends mentioned to me, we were talking about Dishonored, especially Dishonored 2,
mm-hmm.
based on the way that you dispatch enemies and kind of get through the levels.
I was talking about it with Steve before
it changes
it went
how the level works. Right. So if you do the nonviolent approach, it stays kind of like a clean, nice, pretty city, but the more people you kill, like the more gritty the whole environment around you gets.
Mm-hmm. And it's something I'm pretty sure you play too, similarly to Undertale.
Yes.
Based on mm-hmm. how you, not even just you start killing bad guys or presumed good guys, or even how you dispose of people.
Right.
That has affected it. And I'm more of a fan of those choices, of being able to choose through gameplay as opposed to here are two people. Which one do we kill?
Or yeah. who do you follow in this
yeah.
case?
Yeah.
Well, I like both. Because, I mean, there are scenarios like, you know, you look at the Wolfenstein games and in not the one before the most recent one.
The Old Blood? New Gods?
The first one that
Old Blood. Oh,
yeah,
sorry,
the
guys.
First one that's that
right.
refreshed.
Yeah. New Order.
Yes, New Order.
New
you make
New
a choice
order,
in the beginning of that mm-hmm. changes how you play the rest of the game. Mm-hmm. There's kind of like two different... paths.
Two different paths to
yeah.
take, yeah.
I like stuff like that. I think it's cool. It kind of gives it, you know, refreshes replayability, but also it makes it feel like your choice actually matters. Now, granted, you still kind of get to the same place, but you take mm-hmm. a different path. You know, it branches outward, eventually it comes back in. Mm-hmm. But it's nice that they put that extra time in that the other stuff is there. But I think part of the reason why we get some games where you make a choice and it seems like it doesn't really matter is because that takes a lot of resources
yeah, agreed.
To invest mm-hmm. into stuff that some players may never even experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people only play a game once, they make their choices, that's it. And you have all this stuff that essentially you wasted money making.
Well, and especially from, I mean, even from a gamer point of view, for a game that's 40 plus hours, to know that there's a whole other, like, set of choices I could have made, especially in a game that's more branching than just, like, one or two big choices that you make that goes off, to mm-hmm. know that there are kind of almost infinite possibilities in this case mm-hmm. that I would have to play this game that has taken, you know, more than 40 hours to complete once, just as someone who doesn't have enough time to do that for mm-hmm. one game... That's kind of devastating to me. Like, I'd want to know mm-hmm. all of these storylines. And, yeah, I can go watch them on YouTube, I guess. But
yeah,
well,
that's
what happened to me with God of War. I was just like, because I knew I wanted to let one of y'all borrow it, I just went God of War Secret Ending. Mm-hmm. And then I found out that it's not necessarily a 100% completion ending, that they mention something in dialogue that says, oh, go do this. And then it happens. But I just was in a mode of, okay, I'm done. What's the 100% ending? So it's a lot of I can definitely see that. And when it comes to choices through gameplay where it's more about the choice than the results of that choice, one that comes to mind is Modern Warfare 2 in the airport. Is you have the choice to shoot at the civilians in the airport, or you have the choice to not. And ultimately... what you do in that moment in the overall story doesn't necessarily matter as much as being present for that event.
Right.
But it's more of a decision as the player to make that decision.
Right.
And in a similar vein to that, I was rewatching before I finished God of War, I rewatched God of War 3 as a 2-hour movie. And I forgot how much... Kratos just killed civilians. Like, it wasn't just the skeleton warriors from Hades that were coming up and attacking. It was he was indiscriminately killing all of those people. And back at that time, I was like, cool, great, whatever. But now looking back at that choice that I made to do that, it's like, wow, what a dick. Like, and not just Kratos, but me, for just going, yeah, whatever, I've got these cool chains, bruh, so angry.
So I think the other thing, too, in the conversation about choices that my friend brought up that I hadn't even thought about is also just, like, little choices you make in terms of just, like, gameplay choices. So even things like League of Legends, for example. Mm-hmm. Being a jungle player, the whole role is based around decision-making and choosing, am I going to focus on top lane or am I going to focus on bot lane? And that influences the route that I take around the map. But then top lane dies before I get there. So now that choice, now I have to make a new choice. And so you kind of get these constantly branching paths that lead you to where the game is. And you get put in situations where, okay, well, I have to make the decision now. Do I try to steal Baron or do I just let them take it and we turtle? In the same way that in like a game like PUBG, you have to make a choice. Am I going to drop at school and where I'm, you know, and
yeah,
bloody blade it out? Or am I going
to
drop?
Despite how forward that...
We hear gunshots close to us. Are we going to go towards it and try to take them out? Are we going to take a car and drive the other way, right? Are we going to ride the edge of the circle? Are we going to drive straight in the middle? Are we going to go for that crate? Things like that are choices. And I think that's why games like that, same thing with like Fortnite, are interesting, because you get those same kind of narrative choices without necessarily, you know, you don't get as much production value.
But you're telling your own story.
Right, yeah, exactly.
You get immediate choices that you can pretty quickly go back in and redo that choice and try it again in a completely different way.
Well, you deal with the consequences and you're allowed to try again. But also, I think part of the reason why games like PUBG and Fortnite and League are so interesting is because of that. Like, you always bring in the knowledge, you know, if you're a smart player and you learn from your mistakes, you always bring in that new knowledge into the game, but it's always a new game. You're always playing against different people. You know, you're never going to be presented with the same choices twice. Like, maybe similar situations, but it's never going to be exactly the same parameters.
At least not for a long time.
Opponent, it's always going to be a different weapon, it's always going to be a different amount of people alive, it's going to be different, you know.
And you know,
it's always
say,
a variable.
If at first you don't succeed, you dust yourself off and try again.
As you just did.
Yeah. Use take two. Something that I just thought of, that if it had existed by the time the movie came out, I'm excited for the future battle royale of Live, Die, Repeat, the Tom Cruise movie.
Oh, boy.
Where you just reinstance, but it's the same thing over and over and over again. But there's another choice that I wanted to bring up, going back to God of War. You get button prompts throughout classic God of Wars of like quick time events. Like, you would start a kill sequence on a chimera and it would be triangle, square, circle, triangle, X. And then you eviscerate it. Yay. And so through this whole time, you have to press that in order to advance. At the end of the game, when you're killing Zeus, it's like just keep mashing circle and you keep punching and punching and punching. And then blood splatter on the screen. You keep punching, blood splatter on the screen until it's completely red, but it's still got that button thing. And little did players know the first time through, you can stop after a little while, but you're just fulfilling that revenge. You have the choice to stop. And there's a similar... I'm sorry if this ends up being a spoiler, but it's not. There's a similar decision near the end of God of War where it's like tap circle and me... remembering, like, I killed the shit out of Zeus, and it was just gross and disgusting and rough, where I would do it a little bit and then stop and see if that was all I had to do, and then do it a little bit and stop and see if that was all I had to do, until the story came through and was a reinforming of the choice of, like, yeah, stop, like, yeah, it was a wonderful moment. That last week I talked about, there are some moments for God of War fans that inform some of the things that happened in this newest God of War, and that was one of them, where if you didn't have that moment of a complete red screen beating the ever living crap out of Zeus, there you probably would approach that last fight a little bit differently, maybe. But Stacey, you have the inherent choice to do the single a walk forward of a line of story in a game like a Skyrim or an Assassin's Creed, but you make the choice to learn as much about the world, explore as much about the world. Where does that choice come from?
I mean, if I'm dropped in the middle of a world, I want to know as much about it as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I like knowing the background. And I feel like sometimes, especially, I mean, occasionally in games like Skyrim, there's a couple of places I remember discovering that are, you know, not marked on the map, that you just stumble onto someone's house. And A, you have the choice of if you're going to immediately fight them and kill them or if you're going to make friends. And I'm recalling one of these people who ended up teaching me a whole bunch of bow and arrow skills. Because I made friends with her instead of I helped her out instead
That's awesome.
Of killing her. And so I get in these games, even though those choices don't really matter in endgame, especially with Skyrim, because you can choose the Empire or the Stormcloaks. Mm-hmm. So you do have a branching choice in that. It does make little moment to moment differences. Another one, I guess, is who you make friends with. Horizon Zero Dawn is another one.
Yeah.
It makes a huge difference in the end scene. How many quests you complete, how many people you make friends with. Again, if you kill someone or spare them, they'll show up later on.
Yeah, they'll show up for that last boss fight. Depending on how many groups you help, it could really, really help that
you
last fight.
You can have a full crew on hand there to help you out. Or, you know, if you've made enemies of everybody and chosen all the nasty dialogue choices.
Yeah, and actually that brings up a good point. As is per usual with me, I forget a lot about Horizon Zero Dawn, but ultimately that was one of the ones where I didn't really waver when it came to my decisions. I always went with... So one of the things that actually I think kind of soured the experience a little bit, and I know you didn't play too much of it, Nate, did you ever get to a choice where it would show brain, heart,
or like force, like, no. like
yeah.
strength,
or like mm-hmm. a fist or something. So they would label the decisions what was the game? There's
an option to turn that on in Deadfire.
Oh, is there mm-hmm. to know what your
so you
kind
of
like
learn
to like what
versus...
right to what kind of temperament is applied to each?
Because that
this
was one of the
aggressive.
Things.
This is the passive one.
Yeah,
this is the friendly one.
That was one of the actually. Oh God, I didn't like Ellie Noire for that reason. Because
you couldn't tell.
You couldn't tell. It would be like, oh, listen, I have to talk to you. Hey, fucker. You know, it would
right.
be
the dialogue
like
option
that.
Sounds yeah. great, and I appreciated
they fixed that.
Though.
By the way,
yeah, I know the new the update. Yeah. They made it like they just said what the emotions were as opposed to the lines of dialogue. But when it came to Horizon, that ultimately helped my decision making.
Mm-hmm.
But because I ended up going with my, I think my heart, ultimately, I ended up picking the heart a little bit
I
more.
I was the reasonable, rational one
the,
most
with the brain.
Of the time, yeah.
Yeah, so that sort of simplifies what the dialogue is and what the choice means and what that ends up becoming. And ultimately, I didn't think about the fact that me going to all of these different groups and having a positive effect on them is what brought them to the end battle. I thought it was just, oh yeah, these are just the people that are here at the end battle.
No, you collect your allies.
Your folks, yeah. Mm-hmm. I didn't do too many side missions, but maybe there's enough in the main story to get you at least the basics
mm-hmm.
for that final boss.
Yeah, there are some that you can't help but run into.
Yeah.
That you'll encounter no matter what, and you usually have to positively complete their parts. So.
Yeah. But that was one where ultimately, aside from the final boss, that was one where I didn't think that my choices really mattered. But
overall, I agree with you just for who shows up
mm-hmm.
at the end. And I think that happens in Final Fantasy too. In Final Fantasy 15, not for the main end battle, but for a extra side battle where you fight the giant, enormous turtle thing. So you could have everyone's help or no one's help.
Okay, folks in chat, if you're watching us live, or if you're not watching us live, you can be watching us live on InventoryFullPT on Twitch. So twitch.tv/InventoryFullPT. Make sure to follow, and if you have a Twitch Prime subscription available, give us a subscription. We've got a couple of fun emotes, and it helps support the show. We're going to be making some improvements, some changes. Thanks to all of the people that have been subscribing and providing bits. Thank you very much. And we do stream throughout the week. Stacey's been streaming Overwatch. I've been streaming Minecraft. I'm going to try to make the Minecraft at least as much of a weekly thing as I possibly can until my creation is complete. But we appreciate everybody who watches live, and it helps us follow the conversation or bring the conversation around and possibly pivot to something that we didn't think about. So if you're live in chat right now, let us know if there's a game that you played that you thought the choices were really important or really mindful, really impactful. Because similarly, it's one of the reasons why I can't play the Telltale games too much is because a lot of the times, it doesn't really matter. The most recent one I played was Minecraft Story Mode, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to play the Game of Thrones one because my wife is really into Game of Thrones, and
I want to play that one too.
Yeah,
even though you know ultimately none of your choices in that one matter.
I've tried to play that one a few times.
Then not good.
It hasn't stuck.
Especially with now since they're all licensed, it's really hard to The Walking Dead did have original characters in it and some comic characters as well. So they established early on that it was separate from the TV show and separate from the comic universe in terms of like plot and what happens in time periods and areas and things like that. So that was their way of going, no, everything matters. But then I wish they would remake the Back to the Future one because it's, if they did it in sort of the modern Telltale style, it would feel a little bit better. The Batman one, too, was kind of eh. I didn't play it, but I worked on a show that played it. But yeah, the Telltale ones is like, hey, choice! And then ultimately it's not. It's still the story that they want to tell.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's that storybook, you know, choose your own adventure, but those always had the same endings at the end, even though there was lots of different ways to get there in the middle.
Yeah, especially for Walking Dead season one, it's like ultimately this has to happen. This is going to happen, and it's whether you can or not. Candace Grant, I'm late, but throwing these oldies but goodies for choice. Knights of the Old Republic, very good. Though with the way that the first one ends, like ultimately that you do land on that. That's what ends up happening,
right?
And I still don't want to spoil that game because it's such a good thing. Miss K Rose, I've played a handful of visual novels, and while I feel like my choices matter, I hate having to wait to make a choice. Yeah, I could see that. It was the same with Hadoful Boyfriend for me. I'm kidding, never played it, but it was funny. It's funny playing Dream Daddy. And I've still only played it once.
Your
but
choices
it,
matter.
It, choices definitely do matter. But playing that with my wife, which was very interesting, and I'm excited to go back and play it again. But it was just like, did we just have a one night stand with this guy? I think we did. And then it's like, achievement, you're a bad dad. Damn it, no, what did we do? No, go back, revert.
Wow.
Go back to old
save. This is a really interesting storyline you created.
Yeah, Richard, yeah, he's a bad boy. Anyway, but yeah, it's weird because initially, you know, I said at the top of the conversation, I don't remember a lot, and then it ends up being a lot more than I thought.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of games I can think of that you have choices in
that mean something,
that do mean something.
What was there ever a choice that either of y'all made that stuck with you, like the fact that you made that choice or didn't make that choice?
I want to say yes, but I can't think of anything, so no.
No, okay.
I mean, Empire.
Yeah.
Oh, the choices at the end. I mean, that ending just... And that ends up being... Even though you play the same beats in the story that is told at the end is wildly different.
Depending
on your
ascended choices.
Yeah, and so... Well, and because you can technically succeed or fail in that game. I haven't played both ways.
Okay.
I've just, finished it. But I suppose you could fail if you don't keep up, like if you don't choose the right people to ascend or you don't like win all of your matches. So that does end up being pretty choice heavy. And the narrative that they weave at the end is extremely specific to the choices that you make. So that could play out any number of ways.
And that's another one, Pyre. You're making a choice after every game.
Yeah, and so actually one of the choices that I did make, I let one of the enemies win in a big important match, and she got to go free. And so the little ending blurb about her, I was like, oh, yeah. I don't know.
Made the right decision.
I did.
Ooh, I do just want to give a shout out to Crusader Kings, which is a game literally about making choices that span generations.
Well, I'd say Civ too.
Yeah,
but it's Civ is so iterative too.
You don't really make choices,
but I think those choices
you
don't necessarily
like gather resources
matter.
And you build things.
And depending on who you ally
Whereas,
with or
like,
make war with,
right? Because with Crusader Kings, it really matters like who you ally with, who you marry your kids to,
thought of another one.
And then who those kids. You know, how many kids do they have, and like who do they get married to, and what alliances get formed, and then you get, you know, the because the game spans can span like 1,000 years. You get 100 years later, like, oh, your great grandson now has a claim on one of your lands, and he's also the king of France now, and now he's like, oh, hey man, I want that, and it's like, bro, I don't even know you, but. But
distant relative?
50 years ago, I was like, man, I got to marry them to somebody in France. So stuff like that, I think,
is
super interesting, too. Yeah.
Choosing to date Solas in Dragon Age Inquisition stuck with me because of things I don't want to spoil. Okay, yeah, that's fair. I just remembered one of my favorite games for the PlayStation 3, and that is all about choices, and that was Infamous. I loved Infamous, and the main thing is you either choose to be a good guy or a bad guy, and if you want to play with all of the best toys, you either have to go full good or full bad. And I was trying to 100% that game. I never did, but one of the easy ones without having to start all the way back over was, even though I had cleared every single area and I was a good guy, to go full bad, you just had to, you know, beat up civilians, blow up property, things like that. But as I was doing it, I was hating it. I was hating myself because I was like, no, these folks look at me as like a good guy, and now they're throwing like Molotov cocktails at me. I could not do the bad stuff in that game.
What you're saying is you wouldn't enjoy Westworld.
I would not enjoy Westworld. Yeah.
Does that make me a bad person that, like, anytime I'm in those open world games with a bunch of civilians, like, I don't, like, make a point to do that, but you know when you reach that point where, like, you've had a long session, you're like, all right, I'm winding down. I'm not going to do another mission. I'm just kind of walking around, and then I just start killing people. Like, it just usually happens. You know, blow some shit up, shoot some civilians.
It depends on the game for me. Yeah. For Infamous, because it was so tied with establishing this identity as a hero for these people in a crisis situation, like, and helping establish food and supplies to a city.
What did you do
city.
At the end? Did you...
All good. Like, all 100% good stuff. Like, and for Infamous 2 and Second Son and all of that stuff, I didn't... Like, I even looked at some of the powers and went...
So Second Son is a sequel of Infamous 2, right?
Yeah. So they took the data of...
So they just... Does it assume the good ending? Or is it the bad
ending?
It
assumed one of the endings.
Which one?
I'm not going to say.
Oh, come on.
Play it.
I'm not going to play it.
Too bad. Then sucks to be you. But they looked at the player data. They looked at...
Yeah, but I want to know if you killed all the humans or if you killed all the superhumans.
Anyway, let me get to the point.
Okay.
It goes with the theme. Sucker Punch took the choices that folks made at the end of Infamous 2. They looked at the trophy data and over a period of time, and whoever did most of the either the good or the bad ending, that was the canon ending. So they left it up to the player base to go, all right, well, Cole's dead, and how he died and the things around his death, whatever. How are we going to move forward with the story? Is it going to be Cole? Is it going to be a new protagonist? And it's a new protagonist because Cole died and has stayed dead. And that's something that they talked about in Second Son, where Cole is dead and he stayed dead. But it affected how the world went forward with treating the superhuman gene. Not the X gene. But yeah, I Infamous was a game all about choice, but I couldn't bring myself to making the wrong one.
Mm-hmm. What? Go ahead.
So, well, speaking of that wrong choice, so going back to Undertale for a second, you don't necessarily know that you have a choice at the beginning of that game. Someone had to tell me I had a choice. I mean, I would have just blindly started fighting, probably, because that's what you're generally coded to do in a video game. So, you know, you get through the first couple fights and you discover that you have a choice. Mm-hmm. You can't go back with a game like Undertale.
You can't clear the save.
You cannot.
No.
Because you try to, and you start again, and they remember.
They remember. It's terrifying.
Horrifying.
A game that remembers.
Yeah, when you're not presented with a clear choice like that, sometimes you don't know until you've already made the first choice mm-hmm. and, like, started yourself down a pathway. And in a lot of the games, it's hard to go back from there.
Yeah. Agreed. But that was the thing with Infamous, where it was save a cat stuck in a tree or burn the tree. So it was very clearly defined what the good and the bad choices were. So that it wasn't like, ha, gotcha. So it was helpful, but it was also just like, use your head. If you want to be a bad guy, be a bad guy. But if not, whatever.
Well, talking about that too also reminded me of one of the cool features in Deadfire is how it is a sequel to the first Pillars game, and that game had a lot of decisions and stuff too. You had a very big role in kind of how the world played out, and you made a lot of decisions throughout the course of the game. And because of that, you can import your save, and it drastically affects how the rest of the game
keeps those choices
plays out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what's really cool is it even shows you in certain dialogue conversations, there's like a little marker that says this is because of the decisions that you made in the first Pillars game.
Hmm.
And it's nice because they offer a nice kind of easy, because I didn't play the first game, I know what happened, but I didn't play the first game. They give you a nice selection of like basically like, here's what you did. You did everything good. You did everything kind of even. You did everything bad. Mm-hmm. You did this. Like, basic kind of generalizations. But you can also go and do a custom, like, and run through almost every situation and, like, side stuff, too. And, like, what did your companions do? Did you finish their quest? Did they die? Mm-hmm. Like, stuff like that. And then when you load it up, when you start the game, some of those people are not there. Some of them are there. Some of them are happy to see you. Some of them are not.
I'm about it, man.
Yeah, it's cool.
That's killer. Any final thoughts about choices in games and decisions? Anything that you would recommend in terms of a game where you can where choices matter?
I mean, I recommend New Vegas if nobody's played it, but I really recommend Deadfire if you're into classic RPGs, even a little bit. Mm-hmm. If you're into Dungeons and Dragons, if you like good voice acting and
story. How does this compare to what was the other one?
Divinity.
Divinity.
Actually, I forgot to tell you about this to add on the news. They announced they're doing a definitive edition. It just launched for Xbox.
Yeah, I knew that it was coming to console.
And PC is going to get the update of all. Apparently, there's the changes are in the thousands, they've said, of like quality of life changes and stuff like that. So I'm excited to jump into it again. I never finished it. The group I was playing with, we stopped playing with it. I'm throwing shade at you guys. So I really want to finish it. I kind of want to do a solo game, but it's also been so fun multiplayer that I'd rather just like finish the one we started. But I'm excited for that. In terms of like, that game is fun in a different way. Mm-hmm. It's fun in that it also gives you a lot of choices in terms of like different things that you can do, but the Pillars really made me feel like I was playing Dungeons and Dragons with like a DM who was like reading the story to me, like doing different voices for the characters and mm-hmm. stuff. And even the way the party just kind of talks to themselves as things are happening, like based on what's going around, or even when you do something and someone stops and wants to talk to you afterwards and be like, yo, are you going to do this all the time? Should I leave? Like, what's going on? It was really cool. It felt very immersive and alive. And that's something I haven't felt from a game in a while. Divinity looks great. I like the I like the turn-based combat better. I like the story and what they're doing, but in terms of like the conversation stuff, I don't think it's on the same level. I think Deadfire does that way better.
Okay, cool. Stacey, is there one that comes to mind?
I mean, I'll throw Pyre out there now. Since, yeah. I think that you can have a plethora of kind of endings, and that really gives you the freedom to follow the same exact gameplay like elements, but you could have drastically different endings.
And it's real fun.
Yeah, and you can craft your own very personalized set of stories based on the characters that you identify with.
Yeah.
And it is a lot of fun.
I would also, I like that world a lot to the point where a Pyre animated series or something like that. But then that takes the choice away from you.
Yes.
Well, the only thing that left that I would have to say is choice does matter to me in a game. And I started playing The Last of Us way back when, I didn't like the character that Noel was. And because that was a representation of me and how I was playing, I didn't like how some of the choices that Null made were out of my control. And ultimately, I ended up stopping playing the game. I watched the ending and I saw the decision that Joel made. Is it Joel or is it Null?
Joel.
Duh. And part of the reason I'm mentioning this is because Patrick isn't here. I ended up seeing the decision that Joel made, and I didn't like it. I didn't want to be that person. That's not me. If a game is supposed to reflect my decisions, yes, it's a narrative to, hey, you're just walking in this person's shoes. Mm-hmm. That is to say, if there was a Last of Us movie, I'll be there. I'll watch a Last of Us movie, but you're not going to see me making that decision that he made.
And it's a lot harder when it's you and you've put these hours and hours mm-hmm. and hours of gameplay only to come to a decision that you don't agree with or wouldn't personally yeah. make. It's a lot more personal.
And similarly to like the Mass Effect thing, where it's like, I made all of these decisions, but I wouldn't choose any of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I did think there was a bit of a huge way too over the top backlash when it came to that. But ultimately, it's that same thing of, all of the stuff that I did as a player ended up meaning nothing because you wrote yourself into a corner. Or, you know, the decision that was made for Last of Us leading into Last of Us 2 may make Last of Us 2 better, and I may like Last of Us 2 better than I ever would have liked Last of Us 1. But when it comes to games with choices, I like when it's clear about it, and if there's a highlight from this generation that you can play pretty easily, I would say Infamous Second Son. It was one of my first absolute must-buys on the PlayStation 4, and it was a really early release in the life cycle of the PlayStation 4, so it's definitely been a minute. It still looks real pretty. Actually, I haven't played it on the Pro yet. It takes place in Seattle, so it's rainy and gorgeous in that game. So I have it on PlayStation Plus because it was free like a month or two back. So I would recommend that. Yeah, I don't know what Patrick would recommend, but Steve, Steve in the booth.
I know what Patrick would recommend.
What would Patrick recommend?
The Witcher.
Yeah, that's right, Witcher. Yeah, good choice. Yeah. Steve, what would you recommend?
That is a hilarious segue because I still have yet to play The Witcher.
Oh, that's right. Same. That's right. No, but you had it though, didn't you?
I've started it a few times, but.
Yeah, I mean, I still have it. I download my games from my PS4, so they're all, you know, sitting on the hard drive too. Or on the servers.
Can't get past that first hour.
But which one, what would you recommend, Steve?
I would recommend the Deus Ex series just because I'm a big fan of that world and that style of storytelling. It matches well to the gameplay and the elements that they put into the director's cut of Human Revolution a handful of years ago. Actually came full circle to the fan requests of that game when it originally came out, saying that they could not actually do non-lethal boss fights. And so when the director's cut of that had come out, they put all that in, and they also added a director's cut narrative throughout the whole game while you're playing it. And artistically and thematically, I would recommend that. Next to Mass Effect, again, the original the original trilogy. That's one of the reasons why I still have a PS3.
The Ridge Trilogy.
Yeah.
And that was, not to go too far off the rails, but since Mass Effect 1 didn't come out on the PlayStation 3, Mass Effect 2 started with a truncated version similar to what Nate mentioned about Pillars of Eternity of Mass Effect 1 to get all of those decisions in, right?
That is correct, and they also did the same for Mass Effect 3.
Yeah, okay. Very cool.
Even Mass Effect 3, just to reiterate one more thing on that, because I have not seen it done in any other game, but they did have a decision when you started the game, not just for that, not just for the background of storyline, but a decision as to what you wanted to be more narratively focused with the gameplay while you were playing it, because you could play it where it would just randomly select the different elements of the story and you just watch what happens.
Oh, that's cool.
Or you could have it more narratively focused towards the, choices that you made in the game with the characters and the storyline, and have easier gameplay. And I've not seen options like that done in a game since.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. Very cool. Thank you for sharing, Steve.
Of course.
And thank you, everybody in chat, for joining us and sharing your two cents. I liked having time to discuss something like this. And I hope that we can have more time in the future to tell the fine folks at Popcorn Talk, and we can get more studio time. Or we need to figure out a way to do discussions like these out of studio. Yeah, let's do that. Yes. But thank you to everybody. Thank you to the fine, again, fine folks at Popcorn Talk. You can follow them at the Popcorn Talk. But until next time, Stacey, what are you working on? Where can the folks find you?
Man, I am working on going away for a few weeks.
Hell yeah.
You know what? Maybe I'll start The Witcher this week. Maybe I'll finish Doki Doki Literature Club. We'll figure out. I got to do these things.
Yes, I know you've got to do
stuff. God of War.
And God of War. I'm going to play God of War.
Finish stuff before you start new stuff.
All right. I'm going to finish God of War this week. That's what I'm going to do. I'm so sorry that I'm like this. You can find me all over the web at Stacey Shuttles. You can yell at me to finish a certain game. Maybe I'll actually do it.
What are you working on?
I am desperately trying not to start my next playthrough of Deadfire. I'm trying to do other things.
Until what? What are you trying to do instead?
Anything else. I just need to be productive and not get sucked right back in after I just attained freedom. Other than that, I'm going to be playing Destiny. Mm-hmm. Lots of Destiny. Should be the new faction rally. Is coming up this week with some changes, maybe we'll see. I don't know. I'm enjoying the PvP, so that's where I'm at. Mm-hmm. You can find me all over the places where you find people at Doglike Nate. Hit me up at Twitter. We'll play Destiny and kill people. It's fun.
And you can find me at Mark B. Donica. What's this week? This week, on the Rooster Teeth show, we're talking about Red versus Blue, as well as some of the Rooster Teeth pilots that they've been airing over the past month. And then I'll be back streaming Minecraft this weekend at some point. I'll be streaming another Minecraft adventure. But I'm also I'm trying to finish up stuff before it gets real busy game season again too. Like I still need to finish Wolfenstein 2.
Yes, I do.
But yeah, I like the world of games that exists right now. As much as I would like to go back and play stuff like Second Son again, there's too much out. There's really too much out. And I you know what? I'm gonna play some more Destiny, not Destiny. some more Overwatch.
Freudian slip.
Yeah, Freudian slip.
Let's play that Overwatch.
Yeah, and some of the events that I can play with or without a group. I gotta play some more Lucio Ball.
I'll play with you guys if you play.
Yay! We did it.
Otherwise, I'm not playing that game.
Nailed it.
But thank you so much, everybody, for watching this episode of Inventory Foil or listening. If you're watching, make sure to hit us up on iTunes and leave us a review. If you're listening, make sure to check us out on Inventory Foil PT on Twitch. Subscribe if you have a Twitch Prime subscription available. We would be ever so humbled if you would provide it to us, because it will help us grow and do more home shows like we were just discussing. It would help us with budget and things like that. But thank you so much for watching this episode. We will see you next time. Bye, everybody.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.